Hi, I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Hello and welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing. It's September the 15th, 2021, Erev Yom Kippur. I'm Raoul Woodliffe and I'm delighted to be joined today by US correspondent Jacob Magid and culture editor, as well as the current regular host of the Daily Briefing, Jessica Steinberg. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Hello, Raoul.
Hi, Raoul.
On today's show, we'll look at the Abraham Accords a year on, as officials from Israel, the US, UAE, Bahrain, and Morocco mark the anniversary of their signing. What were the various messages that came out of the anniversary ceremonies, and what can be gleaned from them about the future of the Accords? And ahead of Yom Kippur and Sukkot, we'll look at various cultural events on offer in Israel over the next few weeks and hear about a new collection of photos from the Yom Kippur War that's been added to the National Library's archives. So, Jessica, as our listeners will know, for the past few weeks, you've been taking over from Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Today, you're on the other side of the microphone. Tell us a little bit about your new role.
So, Amanda Borchel-Dunn, as many of our listeners might know, is on maternity leave, having just had a baby. And she's my, I always call her my work wife. So we're close friends and colleagues. And she asked me to take over for her while she's on maternity leave. It's been a lot of fun, a steep learning curve, and really enjoying it. I hope you guys have been enjoying listening to a very different voice for the last couple of weeks.
Well, it's great to have you on the show, and we're delighted you're now part of the team.
Thank you.
So, Jacob, over the past couple of days, you've been at two events marking the year anniversary since the signing of the Abraham Accords, one in Washington, D.C., and one in New York. Tell us first a little bit about these events. Who was there? What was said?
Sure. So the first event I attended was in New York at the Jewish Heritage Museum in Manhattan on Monday. And this was attended, both events were attended by ambassadors from Israel, Bahrain, the UAE, and Morocco, with U.S. representatives there as well. The first one was hosted by the Israeli mission at the UN and included the UN ambassadors. And the second one in Washington was hosted by a foundation that was founded earlier this year by former White House senior advisor Jared Kushner, who helped broker the Accords. And he founded this organization called the Abraham Accords Peace Institute, which hosted this event. And Kushner spoke at it today with the other ambassadors to the U.S. from those four countries that were present at the event. Both of them kind of saw the sides laud the progress that's been made over the past year. We're talking, I think what was most notably lauded was the 250,000 Israelis who visited the UAE since the Accords were signed. And we're talking during a year of COVID. And that's a pretty astonishing number.
Wow.
I think everyone, every Israeli knows at least someone who's been to Dubai or Abu Dhabi in the past year. And then there was other MOUs that were signed, opening of embassies, appointment of ambassadors, direct flights, obviously, that allowed for all those Israeli tourists. And then also in Bahrain and the UAE recognized for the first time International Holocaust Remembrance Day, which is something that hadn't happened before the Accords. So those things were talked about at both of the events. What was unique to the one in New York was that a representative from Oman, which does not have relations with Israel, was present for the event hosted by Israel. And at the one hosted by the U.S., there was a ambassador from Egypt there and an ambassador from Sudan. Sudan did not send someone to the Israel-hosted event. And there have been concerns that there's been a little bit of backsliding in that agreement to normalize ties that was reached in October that hasn't been finalized yet. And there's been concerns that because of the opposition within the Sudanese public that it might not be ever finished. But, so that was a good sign, I guess you could say, to see the ambassador in Washington, today for the event.
It seemed to be that there was maybe different messages coming out from some of the different representatives at the different events. Gilad Erdan, the Israeli ambassador to the UN, said we've only just begun pushing the idea that perhaps there could be further deals with other countries, a further adding of content to these deals. Jared Kushner, on the other hand, warned against neglecting the Abraham Accords, somewhat of a message perhaps suggesting that the new Israeli and American administrations are not as committed as perhaps he would have liked?
Yeah, correct. I think he didn't name the Biden administration explicitly when he said that. He basically said, if you don't foster these accords, they risk regression. And I think he maybe was careful given that there was a Biden representative, the acting assistant secretary of state for Near Eastern affairs, that was present. But basically, I think his concern is that this was his kind of shining, his main accomplishment as in the previous administration. I would like to see them succeed, given specifically because they have bipartisan support. Now, there's a little bit of an asterisk next to that bipartisan support because Trump is such a polarizing figure. I think even though the Biden administration supports the idea of normalization, they're kind of uncomfortable with Trump being associated with it. They don't use almost ever the term Abraham Accords to describe the agreements. They refer to them as normalization agreements, except for actually today when the State Department announced that they're going to be hosting their own event on Friday, where Secretary Blinken will be joined by the four foreign ministers from Bahrain, Israel, the UAE, and Morocco at an event. And they did refer to it as the Abraham Accords. I think he's been more willing than others in the administration, who I think feel a little bit more strongly in their opinions against Trump and some of the folks that negotiated the accords. Blinken is seen as more diplomatic. So, again, there's obviously this hesitance to use the terms, but more prominently, I think there's a strong degree of discomfort with what was given by the Trump administration to some of these countries to sweeten the deal. With the UAE, it was the F-35 planes, which Biden held initially and then chose to allow through. And with Morocco was the recognition of the Western Sahara disputed region, which also Biden officials had hinted that they were uncomfortable with. But later, Biden assured Morocco behind closed doors that this was not something he was going to reverse. So I think while they're fine with the agreements that were signed and they agree with the phenomenon, they're not willing to go as far, use the bilateral ties that the U.S. has with these respective potential countries to coax them into normalizing with Israel. I think the real test will be Sudan, where, again, Biden officials have said multiple times that they want to see that this agreement with Israel get over the finish line is the rhetoric they use. I spoke with Nick Kaufman, who's a British-Israeli attorney who advised the Sudanese transitional government in their proceedings at the International Criminal Court. And because of his ties to Sudan, Israel used him to hand deliver these letters, or a letter from Prime Minister Netanyahu earlier while he was still in power, to Sudanese military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. And basically it was Netanyahu's letter that says, we're interested in normalizing ties. And then Burhan sends him a letter back saying, we're also interested. And basically because of those letters led to the breakthrough, that brought us closer to the normalization agreement. Kaufman basically explained, that Sudan is not part of the Abraham Accords. It never seen itself as part of the Abraham Accords. And because it wasn't their agreement with Israel wasn't initiated by the U.S. It was the other way around, where Sudan used Israel to reach the U.S. and to get removed from the state sponsors of terror from its previous government that it had been on. So it was this kind of opposite dynamic that led them to normalize or seek normalization of ties with Israel. And therefore, there's this kind of reticence to hesitance to be associated with this broader group of countries, in addition to the internal pushback and opposition to Israel. But Kaufman still said that he thinks that eventually this will happen. It's less of an issue of what the U.S. can do, and more kind of the internal politics in Sudan playing out.
Now, the position of the new U.S. administration towards these accords begs the question of how it could be possible to move forward with potential other deals. As you mentioned, Oman, there was talk a year ago of potentially some sort of movement on a deal with Saudi Arabia. What do you think the possibility is of those potential agreements moving forward under this new administration?
So I would say it's really not good. Because again, I don't think they're willing to sweeten the deals the way that the Trump administration was, because they were just so committed to these agreements. On the other hand, I think once countries understand that this is a priority for the U.S., especially those countries who are looking to win favor from the U.S., right now, Saudi Arabia in particular, which is concerned about how tough the Biden administration will be in terms of their human rights record. If they see that the Biden administration takes this very seriously and really wants to see some additional normalization agreements signed, then they might be willing to forego some of the things that they might have been able to get under Trump just to get on the good side of the current U.S. administration. But until now, I think we've kind of only seen rhetoric from the Biden administration, and there hasn't even been a special envoy appointed to this role. Now, it's totally understandable that the Biden administration is focused elsewhere. They have priorities of combating China and Russia, global climate change, and then obviously the domestic issues surrounding COVID. And it's fair to focus on those issues. But if it does want to, do more than pay lip service to this, they're going to have to, I think, show potential countries how seriously they take it.
Like Cool Runnings meets Bull Durham, Designated Hitters is the story of how a team that doesn't even have a baseball stadium made it all the way to the Olympics, and how a ragtag group of dreamers found themselves playing, and almost beating, the world's best baseball players. Produced by Soul Shop in partnership with the Israel Association of Baseball, join me, Chana Weinberg, and experience the glorious intersection of the American pastime and the Holy Land, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Now, turning to you, Jessica, it is Yom Kippur starting this evening. And in the next couple of weeks, we've got some busy cultural events across Israel as Israel moves into the Sukkot period. Tell us about some of what we can expect.
Right. Well, it's a good period this time, Raul, this year, unlike last year when a lot of things were online or were not happening at all because we were deep in a lockdown last year at this time. So this year, all the usual events and festivals that happen are happening again. The Tamar Festival, for instance, which is down by the Dead Sea, is a huge music festival that goes on all hours of the night throughout Sukkot. All of Israel's major headlining artists will be there. So that's a great opportunity for people who want to go down and hear some good music, socially distanced with masks outside. Another annual event that takes place and that is back on again this year, it was online last year, is the Haifa Film Festival. It's a film festival like many other film festivals. It actually always takes place over Sukkot in the northern coastal city, the port city of Haifa. And it's they have a few different themes that run throughout the festival. They have Israeli films, Israeli short films, international films, international feature films, American films, and a really nice piece that they're going to have this year are culinary films, including one about mushroom hunters, truffle hunters, called Truffle Hunters. It's a documentary. I'm looking forward to that. And there's one about Anthony Bourdain, the globetrotting chef and food writer who died fairly young a bunch of years ago. And there's a documentary about him. One about the first restaurant in France at the time of the revolution. That's a feature film. So that's sort of a fun little bit that's happening at the Haifa Film Festival. And what they're doing, like a lot of other events, is that they're doing it all in person, but they're also having a big chunk online because a lot of these film festivals have found that there are people who are not venturing out yet or who prefer to watch from the comfort of their home and their TV screen or computer screen. So they're also offering a pretty hefty number of screenings on their digital format. So that's that. Here in Jerusalem, the Botanical Gardens, the Jerusalem Botanical Gardens, the one at Givat Ram, is doing another artistic exhibition that is basically in their new kivun, their new angle of having a lot of art and sculpture in the gardens. It's basically looking to bring more people into the gardens, and the gardens, since they are outdoors, are a very good place during this time of the pandemic. You can be outside, you can see nature, and you can take in some culture. This one is called Seeing the Invisible, and it's very cool, actually. They basically collaborated with 11 or 12 other botanical gardens around the world. It turns out that botanical gardens are in close collaboration at all times. And they, you know, usually like send seeds back and forth to each other or collaborate about different plants. And this time they collaborated on artists. The Jerusalem Botanical Gardens looked for artists that deal with nature, deal with technology, because this is called an augmented reality exhibit. Essentially, they went to all these different artists like IYY and Sigalit Landau. She's a well-known Israeli sculptor, and about a dozen others. And they, some of them took existing artworks, some of them made new ones, and they then sent images of those artworks to the studio in Copenhagen, which then created an augmented reality app. So what does this all mean? When you go to the Botanical Gardens in Jerusalem or the one in your hometown, like I said, there's a list of 12 of them. You have your app on your smartphone. You open up the app. There's a map. You follow the map through the garden. And then at different spots on the map, it'll say, ah, sculpture here. And then you tap on it and this augmented reality sculpture image pops up in front of you. So the actual artwork is not necessarily on the grounds of the botanical gardens, but it is. And you can sometimes walk into it and walk through a portal and walk through another portal of this sculpture. And it's, like I said, you know, more than a dozen artworks in the botanical gardens, and that's opening over Sukkot. That was a long explanation for something that I think will actually be quite cool to visit.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I think it will be, actually.
And ahead of Yom Kippur, which also marks the anniversary of the breakout of the Yom Kippur War, you have a story about some new images from that war that have been added to the National Library's archive ahead of the festival.
Right. I actually just wrote that this morning. It's a great little story and fascinating images. Basically, there was a U.S. photographer who came to Israel in 1973, in October 1973, maybe in September. He got stuck here over the course of the war. He had come to take images of archaeological sites and historical sites. But because he got stuck here in the war, he decided to venture off to the battlefields, which I guess he was able to do somehow. And something that we don't think about a lot is that, of course, the Yom Kippur War broke out during Yom Kippur, but it lasted into Sukkot, which comes right after Yom Kippur. And he took a lot of images of soldiers on their jeeps and military vehicles, and they constructed these little sukkah hut booths, dwellings on top of their jeeps. You know, they would like find some wood and find some branches. He has these amazing images that he captured of soldiers sitting in a sukkah, several of them on their jeeps, military vehicles, even one he said literally as they were on their way into Syria, in enemy territory. But I guess maybe it looked like a bush. And so it was able to make it through, and they were able to sort of set it up before they went into fight a battle. So that's going to be, that is on the Times of Israel today. That will be up there today in the Tales of the Times. So take a look at those photos.
Well, that's all we've got time for on today's daily briefing. We'd like to wish all of our listeners well over Yom Kippur. Thank you, Jacob and Jessica, for joining me.
Bye, Raul.
Thanks for having me. Have a meaningful fast, everyone.
We'll be back next week with more of what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's daily briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raul Woodliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.